Well, good evening to everyone. Glad to see you. Enjoyed the singing and the prayer. Brother Junior hit on some things we're going to talk about tonight, which is holding our temper and how we work with other people and things like that. And this is a continuation from last night. And when I worked on this one after I got home last night and today, it turned out to be a little longer than I thought it was. And so I told Carolyn how many slides I had, and she just said, oh, no. So we're going to move on pretty quick with very little review from last night. We will do a little review. Let's look at our three questions we want to talk about. How I love to love lawfully. Is the law a distraction to my love? Am I giving agape love? Is the law a labor to love or a labor of love? So we'll talk about different things and hopefully get a good answer to that at the end of the lesson. Just briefly, a couple of slides to review. What is law? It is a rule of conduct or procedure established by custom, agreement, or authority. One single rule. We're going to be studying a group of 15 single rules. But it is a body of rules and principles governing the affairs of a community and enforced by political authority, a legal system. Hopefully we'll have time to bring all these individual rules together to look at them as a body. And it is the condition of social order and justice created by adherence to such a system. What condition was Paul trying to tell us about in 1 Corinthians 13? Observations on love, two Greek words were translated love with slightly but significantly different meanings. First one was phileo, a warm, fuzzy, feely kind of love, as of a friend, or as of someone that gives you back something, or as of an infant. I've been trying to figure out why I fall in love so quick with the grandkids. And apparently I'm not a stranger to do that, because almost everybody I've seen fell in love with their grandkids quick, before the grandkids could even do anything. But we just love them. They give us some kind of feedback, and we thrive on that feedback. That's phileo love. That's that warm, fuzzy, feely kind of love. But then we have agape love, which is what is mostly used in the New Testament. Includes some warm, fuzzy love, some phileo love, but more a sense of duty and of specific obligation. Then last night we also talked about the commandments to love. And you hate to talk about a commandment to love, but you'll see what we're talking about in just a minute. It is by them that we show our love to others. These things we're going to study tonight are not things we do to God. It's things we do to other people. Most of what we're going to read is about how to not be selfish, but to do things for other people. A lot of things we read in the Bible talk about self-improvement, talk about worshiping God, talk about the worship service, talk about giving, talk about these things, so on and so forth. And they're things we more or less, I don't say do in a closet, but we can do all by ourselves. Just show up on Sunday morning and do it, listen to the preacher and that kind of stuff. But what we're talking about is how do we reach out to other people? This is not something you can do in a closet. 1 Corinthians 13 was not written for closet Christians. It was written for how do we treat our neighbor. We may not walk across the street and try to spread the gospel to him. We ought to. A lot of times we don't. But those that we do come in contact with, and our brothers and sisters in church, wherever we are with another person, we've got to show these characteristics of love. Here's our list, and we won't look at this real closely because I want to break it out for you. There are 15 qualities here. Charity suffers long and is kind. Charity, or agape love, envies not, vaunts not itself, is not puffed up, does not act unseemly, seeks not her own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. 15, and I really suggest to you, commit these to memory. commit them to your memory so hard that when you're about to get into an argument and you're about to think of something smart to say, or you're about to be let yourself be agitated, just roll through this list of 15. Just take time and roll through them. You'd be surprised what it'll do to you, how your relationships might change. They're easy to memorize. Whoever wrote the Bible and divided verses into verses did a pretty good job. If you look at the first five, that's verse 4. And they sort of fit together, and they're pretty easy. Suffers long, kind, envies. The last two, as we're fixing to see, are joined at the hip, so they needed to be together. Verse 5 covers the next four. Not act unseemly, seeks not her own, not provoked, and thinks no evil. And then it gets easy because verse 6 is the next two, and they are practically in the same breath. Rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. That's easy. And then verse 7 is the last four, which are the all things love. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. So they're easy and will have a terrific impact on your relationships. Your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your kids, people you work with. Anybody will benefit from you knowing these 15 qualities of love. So we're going to go tonight with the last 13. We looked at suffers long and kind last night. And again, for sake of time, we're not going to back up into those two. But suffers long means just what it says. It means patience. It means to suffer a long time if you have to. It means to forbear, not to say what you could say. And then kind, I would like to have given you the definition of that one, because that is one smooth definition. The word kind is used here. Means good-natured, easy to get along with, smooth. I love that one. The next one on the list is envies not. Love envies not. To feel uneasiness. Now, I do have 40 slides, okay? So I can't do a lot of ad-libbing in between, but I think you'll see that these will speak for themselves. To feel uneasiness, mortification, or discomfort at the sight of what we deem as superior happiness, reputation, achievements, or others. We envy something somebody else has got, and we don't want them to have it. That's the wicked part of envy. It's not that I want somebody else's truck. I want the truck and I don't want him to have it. Actually, injury is involved. Take something away from somebody else. You might have remember the words of this old song, "I'll See Who Smiles." Remember that one? Let that one roll around in your head. "How I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where can I find a woman like that?" Obviously, about young love. And Jesse must have had a hot woman, and somebody else wanted that woman. How I wish. That's envy. Love doesn't envy. Well, we'll try to answer this question as we did last night, is how? And your answer will be better than mine, but how do you not envy? Well, I'm going to give you my best shot, and then you can improve on it. How do you not envy? Do not diminish the accomplishments or possessions of others, but rejoice with them. Be glad somebody else got a new truck or something else. Be glad. Don't envy. Displace envy for gratitude for your blessings. I'll ask you a question. How envious do you think you can be if you're full of gratitude? Can envy and gratitude exist in the same person? If you're quick, they might can. But if you're serious and honest, they can't. Displace envy for gratitude for your blessings. Nourishment, a fulfilling purpose, loved ones around you. A day without pain. There's a lot to be said for a day without pain. Remember that things envied sometimes become chains. The person that wants the big house and the big yard and the pool and the barn and everything else may find himself a slave to cutting grass and tending fences. And it could be that Jesse's girl may turn out to be a high-maintenance woman. So that might not have been a good thing to envy and to want. The next thing was vaunts not itself. Now that's a little strange, but if you know what the word vaunt means, it means to brag and to build up oneself. It is actually, okay, the action of boasting or bragging. Not the feeling that comes next. This is actual doing it. This is the people that boast and brag about the things they've got, the things they want, about how much money the last deal they made cost them, about their investments, one thing and another. It comes from a feeling of superiority or sometimes inferiority. Okay? Sometimes people feel inferior, and so they brag and boast and exaggerate the truth to make themselves look bigger. Toward others, and a feeling of contempt for them. Certainly, if you brag to someone, you're not trying to build them up, are you? Is anybody trying to build up someone else when they're bragging about themselves? Love would boast of others to build them up. Love would not let us boast in a way to put down another person and to discourage another person. But how do you do that? How do you not vaunt yourself? Well, a couple of ways maybe. Imagine someone boasting in a way that would confound you and how you would feel about that. Confound is a word in the Bible that means to be ashamed or to be embarrassed at a condition of not being ready, of not being adequate. You're embarrassed because you're not prepared. You're not good enough. And that's what boasting does, is put people down. If you hate a physical bully, and I don't know how you feel about physical bullies, but I hate physical bullies. If you hate physical bullies, then certainly you would refrain from being a verbal bully yourself. And that's what vaunts, person that vaunts himself, brags and boasts about himself, he's a verbal bully. Just recognize it for what it is. But he can change and we can change. And we can avoid being that kind of person. Now we get into why a person would want to vaunt themselves. Because the fifth thing and the last thing in verse 4 says, love is not puffed up. And that word, that expression means the feeling of pride, vainglory, vanity, self-importance. The feeling. Not the bragging, that's the one before this, but this is the feeling of it. It's the idea that I can be, and I probably am, better than you. And so I'm going to brag about what I've got and what I've done and what I can do. This is the feeling. This is the feeling that gets it all started. A lot of hard feelings get started because people are puffed up. So how do we overcome that? One way is to realize that others have good qualities as well as we do. I learned a good lesson on this when I was going into my sophomore year at Auburn. I went to a camp, and there was people, kids there from all over the country. And they divided us up into teams. I still remember, we were the Crows. And the teams competed against each other. We played softball, and we threw a ball, and we'd run, and we'd do all this other stuff. And there was this one guy there. He was kind of a tall, muscular guy. Really looked good. But he couldn't do much. He couldn't throw the ball real good. He couldn't run real fast. He couldn't hit the ball real good. About everything we did, he was way down on the list. But he looked like that he ought to be able to do something. Well, about toward the end of the first week, we had swimming competition. And you can guess what happened. When that boy hit the water, he was like a porpoise. Swimming was his thing. Nobody could touch him. Nobody felt sorry for him anymore after that. It wasn't like poor old so-and-so. He can't hardly do anything. It's like, man, where did he come from? So just because you judge someone that you think you're better than they are, don't think that you're right. because others have good qualities as well as we do. Remember the virtue of being clothed in humility. Clothed in humility. That's the best way I can say to not be puffed up. It's just simply to be humble and thankful for everything you've got. Have confidence and gratitude in God, in what God gave you, and not as if you gave it to yourself. I just wonder where people come from when they brag about the things they've got, as if they've got something somebody else didn't have. And they watch the news and they see the pitiful conditions in other countries, and how were we born here to have this much? And these other people, these other souls, were born in a country with a lifespan about 30 years shorter than ours. Then who are we to ever want to brag? Because what was it? Luck? Was it fate? Was it grace? Would we be so bold as to say, I'm so good, God graced America by letting me be born in it, and that's why I'm so great, and boast about it, when it was just sheer chance that we happened to be born where we were born instead of being born over in Africa where Danny and them are going, where people starve? Okay, moving into a little bit different area. Does not behave itself unseemly. Just doesn't act rudely or doesn't act ugly. To conduct, the word, the phrase means to conduct improperly or disgracefully in a manner to deserve rebuke, disapproval, blame, or disgrace. I can't describe it specifically, but each one of us knows when something just doesn't look good. It's a t-shirt that's got something on it that's just not good. It's a pants or clothes or a blouse or a shirt that just fits a little too tight or a little too short. It's just something that's just, it just doesn't look good. And we can't put a finger on it, and we're not going to attempt to say you're going to take a tape measure and measure it, but it's to conduct improperly or disgracefully. It's just not good. Something that will embarrass you or make you cringe when you learn better. Have you ever had that happen? You did something or got caught in a situation, acted in a certain way, like me, put your foot in your mouth, said something wrong, and later, when you think back upon it, even though you may have been something you asked forgiveness for, but when you think about the way you did, you feel embarrassed and kind of cringe just a little bit. Man, I wish I had that one to do over. Bad behavior sows bad seeds. Bad reputation, bad anticipation. Love seeks that which looks good and right in all circumstances, in all relationships with superiors, inferiors, all relatives, and all friends and acquaintances. It doesn't single some out. You know, some people do a pretty good job with the people they like, the people they really respect. Boy, they just, sugar wouldn't melt in their mouth when they're talking about this certain people that they really like. But don't let them get off on the folks that they don't like or they don't respect. But love treats all people in a good way. Love sows good seeds. And then good behavior, cultivate the fruit of that love. So how do we do that? How do we not behave unseemly? Well, this is a simple suggestion for those that might embarrass themselves with what they say. Put your brain in gear before you let the clutch out on your mouth. The best cure for foot and mouth disease. We talk sometimes when we ought to be listening. And we don't choose our words wisely. Now, I work with a fella that talks slow. I mean, he probably thinks of everything that he's going to say for about 5 seconds. And it rolls over in his mind at least 3 times before he ever gets it out. And so I'm sitting there like, come on, I got something else to do. Come on, come on. But he hardly ever makes a mistake in his speech. But sometimes it's a chore listening. I love him. Just make sure you know what you're fixing to say before you pop off. That's love. That's love. Why do we think that we have to come back and speak so fast? And what's wrong with a pause? I've had to learn this because I get nervous trying to give a lesson and I talk too much. And sometimes you have to stop to let yourself kind of catch up. Before you speak, ask three questions. Is it right? Is it good? Is it worthwhile? It can be right and not be good. It can be right and it not be worthwhile. It doesn't have to be said. Sometimes we think we're so smart that everything we think of has to be said. That'll get us in trouble. Get us in trouble. Love seeks not her own. Now we're getting serious. Seeks not her own. That means unselfish. Not self-centered. Not do things that build us up at the expense of others. This is the death nail to a control freak. Okay? Seeks not her own. And there's plenty of them around. This will handle that. If being puffed up, which we just studied, if being puffed up is a poison, then this is the antidote. Seeks not her own. And I hope you begin to see, if you remember these things, you memorize these things, how they work, how if you have one, it's going to take care of another. If a person seeks not his own, he's going to seek something for someone else. He's not going to want to brag. He's not going to brag. He's not going to be puffed up. Seeks not our own, seeks the welfare of others, the happiness of others. Does not mean, this is an important point, this does not, don't interpret this phrase to mean we don't seek our own salvation. It does not mean that we should neglect ourselves, but when our own safety, physical, mental, and spiritual safety is secured, our love should be in helping others secure their safety. So it has its limits, but well, how do we do that? How do we seek not our own? Realize you can never get enough satisfaction for yourself without taking something away from someone else. You believe that? Do you believe that you can never satisfy your own satisfaction without taking something away from someone else? Because humans have such a desire to satisfy themselves. When he was playing ball, one of the parents of one of the boys that was on one of the ball teams was talking, and he said, we got talking about different things we had done and what we had done, and he said, there's one thing I regret a little bit. He said, when my boys were growing up, my family was young, I still wanted to take my dirt bike and ride up in the mountains at Cheehaw and spend the weekend with my friends, because that's what we had done. And he said, my family didn't suffer. I made plenty of money. They didn't suffer. But the daddy wasn't around because he was on a dirt bike with his friends up in the mountains. What was he doing? He was seeking his own satisfaction. Now, he wasn't spending a lot of money, but he was seeking his own satisfaction. And who was attending to the satisfaction of the kids? Wasn't him, because he wasn't there. And we soon learn this, that we are limited with the amount of time we have. We're limited with our resources. And time and resources, put those two things together, and we've got so little of it that we have to decide, what are we going to spend our time on? What's the best thing for me to spend my limited time on? Am I going to spend it on something that's all about me? Or am I going to sacrifice it to help someone else, my kids or someone else? Learn to cherish the indirect satisfaction of increasing their satisfaction. Your friends, your kids, if they're happy, if you can help make them happy, find joy in that and not off riding your dirt bike by yourself. Not easily provoked. Let's look at the word provoked first. The word provoked technically means to sharpen anything. As in a sword or a knife, But it also means to sharpen the mind. And therefore to sharpen the senses, to sharpen the temper, courage, to excite someone, to provoke someone is to get them all jacked up for something. Could be anger, it could be who knows what. But now let's throw something else in here. The word easily is actually not in the original. Now, I found interpretations of the word both ways. I found interpretations where easily was added to the definition, and I've got some interpretations where easily is not in the interpretation. So I'm going to look at it like it's not there, and I'll tell you why. If you put easily in there and you say not easily provoked, that opens it up to interpretation. What is easily provoked? Well, one guy says, my wife looked at me sideways with that look, and I knew what was coming, and so I hit her before she could say anything. That's how easily I was provoked. Another guy says, she provoked me, but she shot at me 3 times and stabbed me before I hit her. That was his definition of being easily provoked. And so if we leave that word easily in there, see, then it's all up to interpretation is what it is. I'll act like I want to is what it boils down to. And so I like it without the easily. I tend to agree with the guys that said it really wasn't in the original. It was added by the translators to soften what this means, because this is strong. Is not provoked. How can you get angry and defend your anger if this verse really says is not provoked? There's no way you can. First, you may break another one of God's laws in your anger. But if that's the right interpretation, you broke this one to start with. When you first got angry, you broke this one. Is not provoked. An angry or a blustery response is not a favorite familiar feeling to one in agape love. A blustery means sudden bursts of feeling. You ever been around somebody that you didn't know how they was going to react in a certain situation? You didn't know if they'd get excited, they'd say something, or what? That's a person that's provoked. They can be provoked by who knows what, and you never know. Not prone to violent anger or exasperation. Oh, here's one. Exasperation. You know what that is? That's when you get tired of a certain situation and you just throw up your hands and say, oh, whatever, and turn and walk away. Whatever. That's exasperation. Love stays put. Love stands there and works things out, if it can be worked out. Not jump to conclusions, accusations, or unfounded judgments. Not easily provoked or not provoked is someone that's calm, serious, sober, patient, governs his own feelings, restrains his temper, subdues his feelings. And I'm picking up speed just a little bit because time's getting away. How do we do this? We need to realize that God is in control and not us. All problems are not our problems and are sometimes sent to prove someone else. Now think of this. What if you're the hard place? What if in your relationship you're the hard place and the Lord is trying to get somebody caught between the rock and the hard place, and the rock is the law? The rock is the law, and the Lord's trying to put a squeeze on somebody to prove them. And He's done this over and over again. This is nothing new. The Lord put people in a bind to test them to see what they'll do. What if you're part of that and your patience is needed, your steadfastness is needed, so the Lord can prove somebody else? You don't know that. You don't know that that's just a fairy tale I made up. You don't know what the Lord is doing when He's working with people, trying to get people's attention. And what if that is our duty? That is our job. There may be no greater outward sign of religion than in changing a quick, excitable, and irritable temper into one that is calm, gentle, and subdued. That may be the greatest victory. We talk about victory in Jesus, the victory over our temper or someone else's temper. That may be the biggest one. Not discounting salvation, of course. That's the greatest one. But in this life. Okay. Thinks no evil. Does not put the worst motive behind another's actions. Does not put evil in the intent of others. How many times do we see somebody do something or think something and we think, they meant to do that. They planned to do that to me. And they may not have. Not at all. You might not have even been in the picture. It overlooks the faults of all, not just the well-liked. The faults of all. Removes fuel from a person that is provoked. Yeah, thinks no evil. That will slow down a person that's provoked. Does not think of all kind of mean things to say the next time our hot button is pushed. It's one of the worst things I think we can do. Is to rehearse in our mind exactly what we're going to say the next time we're around someone. I've tried it. I don't know if you have, but I've tried it. Never did work out too much. Because whenever I got around the other person, I was just too much of a softie, I guess. They did something or they said something, and I just couldn't bring myself to say the main things that I was thinking that I was going to say the next time I was around them. It just didn't work out. It was wasted time, wasn't it? I just got all provoked for nothing. Because I couldn't say the mean things I thought. So why even think them? Thinks no evil. Love thinks no evil. Well, how do you do this? How? Find contentment in the Word through the Lord. And not at the expense of others. That's why we talk ugly to somebody else, is to please ourselves sometimes. Realize that others are probably doing the best they know how to do. Now, this is hard. Other people are just simply doing the best they know how to do. Maybe they were raised a little rough around the edges. Maybe they don't think anything about the way they're carrying on. It's not that they're against us. They just are not that tuned into us. Hard to hold them at fault for things like that. Except the thought that some people are just like rattlesnakes. Now that's kind of a tough thought because we kind of think everybody ought to be nice like we are. Everybody ought to be good like we are. Everybody ought to be as patient as we are. But some of them are not. Some of them are like rattlesnakes. So I'll ask you the question then. I didn't write it down. Are you afraid of a rattlesnake? What's your feelings toward a rattlesnake? Now I'm afraid of a rattlesnake if I don't know where he is. But if I know where he is, I'm not afraid of a rattlesnake. As long as I got something in my hand to keep him away. But if he's over there and I know he's over there, that's okay. Now, what am I getting around to saying is, if people are like rattlesnakes, if you've been around them just a little bit and you've picked up on their nature, and anybody that's real observant can pick up on somebody else's nature pretty quick. That people usually will show themselves sometime. And when they show you what their real personality and characteristics are, and you realize, hey, this person is a snake in the grass, then, you know, the old saying is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Now, I'm not saying you're ugly, but I'm just saying you don't think evil. See, if you let yourself think evil, you're going to think mean of that rattlesnake. But the rattlesnake is just what it is. It is what it is. It's a rattlesnake. You don't think evil of it. You're just cautious around it. You know it's there. And you step around it. And that's the way you do with people that's fractious. Is another word to say it. People that are fractious. You know they've got that temperament. And you just get around it. You don't let them get you all bent out of shape. Okay, love rejoices not in iniquity. Not iniquity in ourselves, but iniquity in other people. Don't delight in evidence that others are in the grips of sin. Someone else is living a bad lifestyle and something bad happens to them, don't delight in it. No malicious or malignant pleasure. No harmful thoughts. Because someone else is in sin, we should feel sorry for someone else in sin. Imagine them being on fire. Imagine them being on fire in hell. What would you do? If you had a bucket of water or a bucket of gas, which one would you throw on them? You'd throw the water. You try to put them out. So why do we think bad things about them and rejoice in iniquity here? Some conversations a Christian just doesn't need to be in. I work with some pretty good people, and they usually carry on good conversations at lunch, but one time they got talking about, oh, and I'll tell you this, almost every one of them, I don't know one that is an atheist. Every one of them go to a church of some kind. But one day at lunch, they start talking about drinking liquor. And they got all excited about what kind they liked and this kind and that kind. And they got to talking about, oh, if you like this, you're really going to like this. And this one said this and this one said it. I listened to that conversation just a minute. And I just got my stuff and just walked out of the break room, went back to my desk. I didn't even want to listen to that conversation. I couldn't be a part of it because I had no ammunition. And I didn't want to listen to it. I was really disappointed in them, quite frankly. So there's some conversations a Christian just doesn't need to be in because it's about iniquity. You don't need to sit around and listen to a conversation about what was in the latest R-rated movie or porn site on the internet that you looked at. The Christian doesn't need to sit around and even be in a conversation like that and listen to what's going on. Don't rejoice in iniquity. There's no greater triumph in the gospel than that we be freed from the effects of sin, either in ourselves or others, either in committing sin or in hearing about its effect on others. Freed. We want to be free from sin. We don't want to dirty ourselves back again with it. Remember Lot's wife. She was supposed to walk out of town and not look back. But she liked something about that town, so she looked back. Wouldn't it be a shame if after all we think, all the good we think we've done, all the churches we've been to and all the revivals we've been to, we get a condemnation like Lot's wife because we didn't shun iniquity but rejoiced in it and with those that were preaching iniquity. Wouldn't that be a shame? Well, how do we do this? How do we do this? Realize that sin does not satisfy. And if you think sin satisfies, then explain to me why people that like pornography may have 50,000 pictures of porn on their computer. You hear about these people that get picked up for child pornography and stuff like that? Oftentimes they'll say their laptop was checked and they had thousands of pictures. Thousands of pictures. How? We all look the same. How could they need 1,000 pictures? How sick can they be? If sin satisfies, why didn't they need one? But see, sin doesn't satisfy. It doesn't satisfy. People that drink want to drink more. People that take drugs want to take drugs more to get that first high that they never can get back again. But that's what they want. Sin doesn't satisfy, so don't rejoice in it. Realize that only through grace are they in iniquity and not us. Talk about being born in a third world country. What if we were born, well, I'm not going to say where because that'd get too close to home. But what if we were born in some place where folks just aren't raised right, where it's just cutthroat, where if you live to be 20, you're doing good and you better get out before you get killed? There's folks in Calhoun County that are like that. Only by the grace of God, fate, luck, whatever you want to call it, were we born where we were and not where they were. Only through grace are they the ones in iniquity and not us. Realize that only through our knowledge do we operate differently than other people, what we know. Rejoices in the truth. Love rejoices in the truth. Truth, it means more than just the truth in the gospel. This word truth means personal excellence. See, this is a big word. Rejoices in the truth. It means personal excellence. A true spirit free from affection, pretense, simulation, falsehood, and deceit. It describes a person's personality. Be careful who you cheer for and identify with. Rejoice in the truth. A lot of folks, people set up as idols, rock stars, football players, basketball players, things like that. They've just been given a gift of physical talents. And they blow their money and they do drugs and they do all kinds of things that we wouldn't like. So be careful who you identify with and cheer for. Cherish time and be happy with good people. I can't say this enough. Cherish time, be happy with good people, people that make you feel good just to be around them. Rejoice may refer to the spark in our life. Rejoiceth in the truth. Rejoices, feels good. That may be the spark in our life. So let's don't waste it on the drama of sin. And sin is a drama. We need less drama and trauma and more study and ponder. We need more study. We need more thinking about the scriptures. And it's 8 o'clock and I've got a bunch left and I'm not going to cover it. So we're going to bring our remarks to a close right now. So I appreciate your attention. The one thing I wanted you to get out of this, some of you may not be back, but I just wanted you to get out of it. What we studied tonight and we built the basis last night was law. We've got to obey God's law. And His law helps us. His law makes us better. Part of that law are the commandments. These are the commandments. They're stated as facts. When this was recorded, these are the facts of love. How God expects us to love. And if we break these, we're not just breaking a good moral law. We're breaking God's law. And breaking the God's law is a transgression, which by His definition is a sin. And I don't know how to tie it together any better than that. This is serious stuff. This is not just stuff about I'm getting my way and you get your way. This is salvation stuff. This is what we'll be judged by. So please think about these things. We'll see about finishing up tomorrow night. If we can assist anyone in obeying the gospel, will you let us help while we stand and sing?